Hello and welcome to this series 2, episode 13, with the mighty, 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 wonderful Mr. Tony Cowards. Now, for those that don't know, and how dare you, Tony Cowards is an amazing stand-up comedian, firstly and foremostly, but he is also one of the best joke writers and punsters in the, in the world. He is bloody amazing. He's one of those people that you read the jokes that they'll put out on social media and they make it look easy, but we know it's not, don't we? You know, it's always the sort of stuff of why can't I write stuff like that? But no, he's got a wonderful way with words. He can turn that skill to any topic at all. And boy, do I test him today. We just have a lovely rambling chat, really, that takes us everywhere from dog walking. I think that's first, it was only earlier today. You'll find out. Have a listen. Loads of different topics. It goes a little bit serious at one point. My fault. I apologise for that. I get it onto lockdown for a bit. But we're soon back on track and we just have a lovely little giggle together. It was really nice. It was one of those lovely distractions. And I hope, really aiming for the top, aren't I, with this podcast? This podcast is a lovely distraction. Hey, if it does that for you when you have a listen, job done. I'll take that. So look, a great show. Tony is brilliant, and I normally don't put spoilers in, but look, listen right to the end, because there is some of the greatest insight into bins, waste collection, waste management that you will possibly ever hear on any podcast anywhere in the world. And the differences, I didn't know different regions would do stuff that differently. Neither did Tony. We blew each other's minds towards the end of this episode. Look, also check out the show notes. You can find all of Tony's links for what he does online. Please do check him out there, and also all of our stuff as well. And a little note, it just tells you how you can go to ko-fi.com /pullback reveal, and you can chip in a couple of quid, whatever you want, just to help us keep making this podcast, work on all the other projects that we're up to as well. There is an absolute ton of stuff going on at the moment. So without further ado, let's go for everyone's favourite bin man. A wonderful episode with a lovely man. Sit back, relax, put your feet up and enjoy Mr. Tony Cowards.
I've had to find some room in my house, so I'm up in the, paint the picture, I'm up in the bedroom with you at the moment, Tony, so I'm...
Oh, nice. What are you wearing?
a grubby white T-shirt, because I've been in the garden. Oh. Yeah, I know. This is like men in their 40s porn, isn't it, this is?
The thought of you gardening, sweaty.
Yeah, I know. Well, it more chasing the one-year-old who, you know what they're like. They're bloody obsessed with, you know, it's Groundhog, not even Groundhog Day, is it? It's like Groundhog Minute when you've got a child that's just started walking, because it's like, get up to move them away from the dangerous thing and put them the other side of the garden, and then, oh, look, they're back at the dangerous thing. So I'll just get up and it's like, sod it, you know. We're all going indoors. Forget the garden. I'm getting it tarmacked. Fuck it.
Yeah, get it coated in, just everything coated in rubber, so it's just dangerous. It can fall over, bounce back wherever.
Yeah, we've gone for the AstroTurfy. I don't think they call it AstroTurf, do they, for gardens, but you know what I mean by that. Just to keep it clean and tidy and that. It's all, but you get, they didn't tell us that you'd get a static electric shock every about 15 seconds while you're in the garden. So like,
really, off AstroTurf?
Yeah. Maybe we just got scammed or something on what, like a job lot.
Is that why they don't like football clubs having AstroTurf pitches?
Maybe, yeah.
That would be great, though. I'd watch a football match where everyone got an electric shock every 15 seconds.
Like, but 15 seconds is amazingly long enough to forget that you're about to get a static shock. It must be like that is the minimum period that it could be, but also, you know, you know, at 15 seconds, you forget about the last shock that you got. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, your kid,
just
like,
relaxed.
Kid touches you on the arm or something. Just, ah!
So do you only get static electricity shocks from it if someone else touches you, or can you get them if you're just moving about yourself?
I don't think I've given myself one yet. But, like, joking, it is really... We are laughing about it. It's ruining my life, Tony.
Is it?
Because it's like...
Sorry, it's improved my day already, though, just the thought of you running around. Are you the only one that gets shocked, or are you able to shock other people?
Like, I can shock other people, yeah, and the kids.
Oh, my God, it must be like having a... It's like, do you remember, have you ever heard about, there was a famous psychological test, wasn't there, that I think they've disproved now, but where, so it was set in a prison. I think it's called the Stanford Prison Experiment.
There you go. Yeah, there's a movie about it, isn't there, I think.
Some people were set up as guards and some were prisoners, and the guards could electrically shock the prisoners, I think.
Yeah.
And they thought that people would learn restraint and wouldn't keep, but all that happens is people just keep shocking each other all the time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly what we've fallen into that way of living as well.
Yeah.
So, but you'll also like, it's now and again I'll do like a joke electric shock, because it's like now such a feature of our family life, that, you know, I'll like touch, you know, respectfully, obviously, like put one finger on my wife's bottom and say like electric shock as I go to do it, thinking that she isn't going to get an electric shock, but then she does get one, and then it's like, what the fuck did you do that for? And it's like, I forgot that it was a 15 second thing. I didn't actually know that. Yeah, so chase the kid across the garden, pick the kid up, kid gives you an electric shock as you pick the kid up as well. Yeah, it's
this is brilliant. This is like some sort of aversion therapy for your family. You'll be in years to come, none of you will be like hug each other or touch each other, will you? And you won't realise why. You'll go like, why are we not a touchy feely family?
Well,
and it's because like for 15 years you were continually electrically shocking each other.
Me and my wife have been together for over a decade, so we didn't need AstroTurf to achieve that, Tony.
I just realised that I don't think it. Well, I think I'm conflating two psychology experiments and putting them together. I don't think the Stanford Prison Experiment was an electric shock one. So before you get people on Twitter, and you'll probably get emails of complaint. I think you'll find it wasn't the Stanford Prison Experiment. That was about something else.
Well, they were doing stuff. They were doing bloody... They were basically just doing horrible things to each other, weren't they?
Yeah.
And it made them... you'd think that they'd feel some kind of empathy towards the prisoners, but they don't. Which, yeah, it, again, perfectly sums up family life in the Rook household.
I think it's family life in every household at the moment.
Yeah, it is, man. How are you guys coping?
We're doing pretty well, actually, because we locked down because we've got one of my girlfriend's children, because we've got four kids here at the moment, ranging in age from 9, we've got 9 up to 20. So we've got a 9-year-old, an 11-year-old, 13-year-old, and a 20-year-old who's back from university at the moment. And the 11-year-old had a heart transplant, so he's on the vulnerable list. So we actually locked down about a week or two before everyone else.
Got you.
I think we're coming. I think we're 8 weeks into lockdown, and we're doing all right. To be honest, we're all still alive. No one has killed each other yet.
100% success rate. Then.
Yeah. So we're considering that pretty good. I mean, to be honest, we'd done projections, and by this point, we'd expected to have lost at least one of us.
Yeah.
To a domestic violence situation.
Yeah, I'd have hoped for the podcast, it would have been good if you'd revealed that now, obviously, and also, we all need a curve to flatten, don't we? That is obviously the, you know, everyone's after a curve of some type to bring under control at the moment. So yeah, yours could have been,
In all seriousness, though, everyone's coping reasonably well. We've had our ups and downs, but no, everyone's. I think for kids, in a way, although they are missing their friends and not being able to go out much, but there's a lot more pros, I think, when you're a kid, because like if you tell kids, right, there's going to be no school It's immediately, hooray! And you go, you're going to have to sit at home all day watching TV and playing on your numerous video games and devices. And they'll go, hooray! I don't really see what the problem is with that.
No, no.
And you get to eat pretty much what you want, when you want.
Yeah, have you found that your maybe normal, like, not to make it sound too draconian in your household, but kind of, you know, the normal rules and stuff like that have gone out the window a little bit? It has, for us now, it has turned into like it's every day's Boxing Day kind of thing, you know, where it's like just, you know, there's no rules, every man for himself, and do what you want.
Have you gone full Lord of the Flies?
I've luckily got the conch at the moment, otherwise we wouldn't be allowed to speak. But yeah,
no, we've not been too bad. It's trying to find some sort of structure, isn't it, though? Because you're absolutely right, it is like that. It's like an eternal period between Christmas and New Year, isn't it? No one knows what day it is. There's kind of food around the house that perhaps you wouldn't normally have. No one really knows what's going on. So we've tried to impose a bit of structure and get everyone. We've tried to sort of all meet up for breakfast, kind of, or just after breakfast every morning.
Yeah.
And have lunch at a certain time and dinner at a certain time, just to give the day some sort of structure.
Yeah, it's more and more built around eating, really, isn't it? It's kind of like, what are we doing today? Well, all there is planning the meals and stuff like that. So now I think for the kids it's been good. As I mentioned to you before, ours are young anyway, so you know, the 4-year-old's like just loved it, you know. It's like, for her, it's been like, you know, no one's gone to work, so everyone's been around all day for and playing together and stuff. So
To be serious for a second, I mean, for kids, like having adults, their adults, their parents or set parents or whoever around more is kind of quite good in a way, isn't it? That, like, parents that would have been off to work, or they would have been in childcare or whatever, it must be lovely in a way, not the ideal circumstances, but obviously to have families actually being together.
Yeah, it's where we are at the moment, and you've probably seen the press and stuff today, the expectation is that from Monday they start to relax stuff a little bit, which I don't, it feels odd to, it doesn't, not that I want this to go on forever, but, you know, it seems more like a political decision than one based in any kind of reality of the situation we're still in, really.
Yeah. I find it interesting, because if say it was relaxed on Monday, would you change your behaviour on Monday?
No way. So the kids, granny lives like literally just a couple of hundred yards up the road, and they've not seen her for, you know, approaching a couple of months now. It's been bloody lovely. She doesn't listen to this. It's been absolutely delightful, Tony. Must admit, one of the plus sides. But this will be the first one she ever listens to now, won't it?
Yeah,
obviously. We all love that Tony Cowards. Get me a
slice. Yeah, she's one
of
our biggest fans.
She is, yeah. Like, they have video calls with her, you know, every night before bedtime and stuff like that. And so she's been on her own, like, the whole time.
Right.
So, you know, no family or anything like that, only talking to, you know, her grandkids over the phone and stuff like that. So her mentality is a little bit different in that, and it would be, I guess, if you or I were just sat in our apartment or whatever, you know, every day, completely different experience to having a family around.
Yeah,
you'll
absolutely
probably have a completely different view on the situation, and you probably would go, oh, right, well, if the government say, you know, if they say on the news that it's all right to do this now, then yeah, I'm fucking doing it the first opportunity I get. Whereas we've had this different experience, you know, with people to bounce off and stuff to do and homeschooling and stuff like that, where we can be a bit more, you know, measured about it, and maybe a bit more like, yeah, we're not rushing out or
what. I guess the motivations are slightly different. I mean, the way I feel about it is, if lockdown is kind of eased a bit, the first people that go out, they're kind of like, you know, when a new bit of technology gets release, like a new, I don't know, a new iPhone or
something. Like the beta and testing
those,
or something.
Yeah, those people that rush out and buy the first one, and then they find that the first one is got tons of bugs and has to be updated all the time, and
actually
is a bit crap because they kind of rushed it out without testing it properly. So I kind of feel like it's usually best to be one of those people that hangs back a little bit and kind of waits a couple of weeks to see how it all worked out.
Yeah, push the kids out the door first, Tony, and then see if they come back, you know, zombified or anything.
Yeah, make them like the canary down the mine.
Yeah, yeah. Keep them on a 6-foot pole in front of you. Yeah, that is, could work. That could work. That, mate. Yeah, I've been quite skeptical of the way that the whole this alleged. I'm not. I know there is a lockdown going on, but we go out for our family walks and stuff like that every day. And over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, the number of people on the streets that we see, and also like clearly groups of people together that like aren't family groups or whatever, you know, and out on their bikes all together. And we've got, there's a little river not too far from our house, and there's, it's sort of like a, you know, a spot where there's always people walking down there, and they, you know, like a bottleneck area as well, where you just walk past it, like on the other side of the road, and you're like, yeah, they're literally, if anyone's got anything there, they're spreading it like crazy. So it's, I don't know, it's, they were talking, weren't they, about the herd immunity that they were aiming for, and then after the public outcry were kind of like, oh no, you're right, of course not, of course we're not going to do that. But I can't help but feel that that is exactly exactly what they've done. You know, when you see buses go past, there's people on buses, there's people going to work, you go, yeah, they make you queue up to get into the supermarket, but there's still people bumping into each other when they're in there. And I don't, it worries me. It's a little bit like, if they're claiming that this is the absolute best that they could have done, what would happen if the, without being too down on this chat, obviously, but like if the virus was something a bit more like the plague or something, you know, where, you know, are they saying like, oh, we've done the best that we can do under these circumstances? It's, I don't know, it then seems odd to be telling people that you can go out to the park and see people as long as you're, you know, 2 metres away from each other, as we're expecting on Monday, really.
Yeah, I think the trouble is human nature is to kind of push boundaries, isn't it? So when the lockdown was first brought in, I think not everyone, but most people took it fairly seriously. But as it's gone on, then people have started to push it a little bit, or some people anyway have pushed it little bit by little bit, haven't they? So now effectively the lockdown is kind of, I think the other thing is the government never really gave a clear message on what the lockdown actually meant. I mean, I read so many different versions. You could go out once a day, or you could go out several times a day, as long as it was to exercise, or if you were doing, but you weren't allowed to go out if it was different types of exercise, but you could go out twice or three times if it was the same sort of exercise.
And yeah, true.
It's just, no one really knew what the lockdown actually meant. So I think everyone made an individual decision of what lockdown was for them.
I think you're absolutely right. It's like, it's something that we've policed ourselves, well, isn't it, in a way? We've all taken responsibility for ourselves.
Yeah. Well, there's not, I mean, we all know that there's not enough police to police it anyway, really.
No.
And also the police were doing weird stuff, weren't they? Like policing people that were in the Yorkshire, in the Derbyshire Dales or whatever.
Yeah.
When they were literally miles from anyone. And not worrying about, like, in London, the tubes were still packed full of people. It's like, I know, this seems a really weird prioritisation of...
I did see when I was out the other day that, yeah, there was, like, people sat on benches, like, a big, fairly, you know, a group of, like, six kids all on their, and on their bikes, just all lent up, chatting to each other, and a couple other sort of groups of people about as well near the shops. And a police car came down and just literally... just drove past, like, that whole scenario that was going on there, which, by the letter of what we've been being told is happening, and what, you know, should be being policed, or potentially could be being policed. But, you know, there's literally, like, 10 people they could have fined, or, you know, arrested or whatever, you know, all within 20 yards of each other then. So it's, yeah, you're right, that was all sending drones out to catch, like...
But it's a weird
Betty
thing,
and
isn't
Wilf
it?
On their little hiking holiday or something.
But it's a weird thing you're asking the police to do, though, as well, isn't it? Because, like, if you were a police officer and you see a group of people and you think, oh, they might be infected and spreading the infection, do you really then want to go up to those people?
Yeah, yeah.
Potentially arrest them? Or you're not really going to be, your heart's not really going to be in it, I wouldn't have thought. You might, I mean, the best you're going to do is say to them, oi, you need to disperse.
Yeah, it is so. What I think once you sort of, there's been so much of acceptance by people, and like you said, that only lasts a certain amount of time, because then people, unless they're probably seeing buildings on fire near to where they live and stuff like that, are gonna. That is human mentality as well, isn't it? That's how we're able to cope with disasters going on, because, well, that was down the road and not here, so we can carry on like normal, kind of thing, you know, and not all start panicking and looting and all the rest of it. So yeah, there is a that element, I think, of people starting to just, I don't know, get bored of it. Is that the wrong thing? And but then as soon as the government starts saying they're relaxing it, then yeah, it would just go crazier from there. The thing that I was reading today was allegedly they might be saying that, like, pub beer gardens and cafes, like, that have got outside areas that they can open.
Okay.
Which just got me immediately thinking, like, right, who's going to put on the first beer garden comedy gig? Like, how long is it going to take for gigs to start? Like, oh, right, we can be in the garden of the pub. So I'm sure there's promoters out there already from this morning's newspapers. There'll be events.
It'll be interesting to it'll be interesting to see what the British weather has to say about that, because it'd be typical, wouldn't it? The government goes, well, if you're outside and you're, as long as you're socially distant, we can have events, and then all of a sudden the weather takes a massive turn for the worse, and then absolutely pissing down with rain.
Oh yeah,
a bank holiday coming up, haven't we? So it must rain. Friday?
We're not allowed to go anywhere, and the weather's been absolutely amazing for the time of year. It's been glorious. So
that's typical British irony.
As soon as that beer gardens are open, and then you know, the worst May in history and flooding and all the rest of it, you know. Yeah, it's on its way, isn't it? I'm starting to, I guess I've got quite selfish reasons that I'm starting to worry about lockdown being, relaxed and that kind of thing anyway, and that I'm starting to get a slight panic over how much I've achieved over this time that we've had. I don't know if you're similar, being obviously much more of a creative than I am. I wouldn't put myself on your level, Tony, but it's,
it's a low bar.
Well, mate, you're talking to a man that, you know, is in fear of electric shocks every 15 seconds in his own back garden. So, you know, there's a our bar is on the floor, you know, it's
I did finish two books yesterday, though. I did read two books, so I'm quite proud of myself.
Okay.
One was Peppa Pig Goes on a Day Out, and the other one was Spot Goes on Holiday, I think.
Brilliant.
So doing some reading comprehension with one of the kids.
Good. Have you found, how has it affected your output then? Because I guess we should mention comedy. That's what this is all meant to be about.
Yeah,
because
it's all been laugh a minute so far, this discussion.
We peaked really quickly with the electric shock material, and then we went straight into famine, disease, and
I'm slightly worried that I kind of hinted that someone in my household could have been murdered.
I was like, mate, I'm completely wherever the guest wants to go, I go. So don't blame me for this. You know, I let you weave this story, mate. Yeah, obviously normal life for you is gigging and writing and out there and doing all sorts as you do with your, under the banner of comedy, I guess. Have you found a rich vein of inspiration during this time?
I suppose the short answer is not really, although that's not entirely true. Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because as a gigging I'm a comedian first and foremost, I guess, and a comedy writer kind of second. So the comedy writing work was always kind of secondary.
Right.
But obviously, being a comedian, that job just, or a live gigging comedian, just doesn't exist. It just, no. It was like overnight, that job just vanished. So I've been doing, I wouldn't say I've been doing any more writing than I would normally do, but that at least has been an output. I mean, what has sprung up is online gigs. I've done a few online gigs, which have been interesting.
Yeah.
Because I was terrified about them, and I would never, I think in normal circumstances, I watch in awe sometimes people that release YouTube videos and their specials online.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, oh my God, I just don't know. It's weird, isn't it? I don't know. There's something about doing it live that seems less stressful in a way, because once it's done, good or bad, it's gone.
Yeah, and true.
Whereas if you put something online, it's there for, could be there for, technically forever, I guess. And if you think, oh my God, that didn't go well, it's kind of preserved, isn't it, for anyone to see. So I guess that was my fear.
Do you know that? Also, yeah, well, no, that's a really good point. Sorry, jump in there. That's something that I kind of have a bit of. So with me podcasting, and I put out a bit of live stuff and stream stuff and stuff like that as well, involving, you know, comics and whatever,
yeah,
you know, ideas that I've had and that kind of thing. And that's sometimes what I'm battling against, especially with the older set, maybe, you know, of kind of getting comics to commit to, even podcasts sometimes, you know, of putting something down on record, whereas yeah, like you said, you go and do a gig and it's what is it, if a tree falls in the wood and there's no one there or whatever, you know, it's like what goes on at a gig generally just happens at the gig and that's it, isn't it? Yeah, it's only the people there that are aware of how it's been, good or bad, I guess. So
it's kind of a weird thing about stand-up, isn't it? It's I find that is the greatest thing about doing stand-up, and also the sort of saddest thing in a way, is like, because when you have a great gig, that feeling is just amazing, and that feeling in the room. But obviously, once you leave that room, once you travel away from the gig, that's just gone, really. Like, especially, let's face it, most gigs aren't recorded in any way. So
no.
So you've just got the memory of that gig, and that's kind of a wonderful thing, but also it's not, it's you can't really go back to it. You can't revisit it. You'll have the memory, that gig was great. But you can't really show anyone or tell anyone.
I think it is that thing, isn't it? Yeah, I know that from when I was gigging, of kind of go somewhere and absolutely smash it. Well, it takes a long time for everyone on the circuit to see you smashing it, you know, because you literally got to go to every venue and gig with every other comic over a period of time for you know, that message and everything to get out there, haven't you? So yeah, it's kind of, and people only ever, that's why you'd not, when I say you, I mean me, I don't mean you when I make this point, honestly. but yeah, that's when you have a shit gig, and then the audience assume that all your gigs are that shit, you know, when it doesn't quite work or when it doesn't connect. And, you know, people will say, oh, you know, you've not been doing it too long then, mate, or something like that, you know, after you've been going for years. And you'll be like, no, it's just tonight was a bad night. Don't you know, can't judge me on this forever.
Yeah, they only have a sample size of one, don't they? And they have to read your entire career off of one example.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter what you've done the night before or... Yeah, the same joke when it absolutely flies one venue and then sinks to the bottom of the ocean the following night, and you're trying to work out what the hell went wrong. And that you're right. Yeah, that's the beauty of it, is the connection, that in the moment, that electricity. I have to get it from my back garden these days, but you know, that feeling of instant connection and gratification on something that you've just thought of. And like you said, you can't fucking bottle it. That's the problem, isn't it?
No, well, I think I'm lucky in that I don't particularly drink anymore. I used to be a bit of a drinker when I was younger, but I don't drink and I don't do drugs or anything. But I can kind of understand why a lot of comedians do struggle after the gig, whether it's good or bad, to then need some sort of like hit of something afterwards, because you've rode that massive wave of adrenaline, and then it all just, or dopamine or whatever the chemicals are that make you feel so great, and then it kind of all just slowly drains away, doesn't it? And you can see, because for instance, I struggle if I do a gig and I have maybe a 2-hour drive home, I do sort of tend to calm down a bit over the gig. You kind of analyze the gig on the way home. But when I get home, I still can't go to sleep straight away. I still feel like I probably need to have half an hour to an hour's downtime just to get over the kind of, and it's such a cliche, isn't it? But the kind of emotional roller coaster of a gig, because it is, you sort of like, I've been doing this a while now, but even still before gigs, you kind of still, it's not nerves exactly. I mean, it is exciting, but it's also, everything's kind of heightened for a good 20 minutes or so before you go on stage. And obviously whilst you're on stage, and then, as I say, it slowly just drifts off after you come off stage. So,
yeah, it's and also obviously, Tony, your gigs are renowned for being absolutely fucking wild, aren't they, mate? So you're I'm teasing. I do apologise. I'm teasing. But well, no, you're crazy, right. Yeah. I had to you're like meatloaf or biting heads off of especially mammals and all sorts. Yeah,
it's especially when I'm doing those old people's home gigs and things like that. They just go crazy.
Mate, you're right. You know, a couple of hours to a few lines of coke afterwards and a bit of a wind down. You know.
Yeah, a bit of Sinatogen, you know, some Ovaltine when I get home.
Oh dear, yeah. And no, you're right though. I had to recently, as I always say, I've not properly gigged or anything like that for a while, but on some live stuff I've been hosting myself, like live online and stuff recently. When I did the first one a couple of weeks ago, I sort of sat waiting for, you know, the go live time and stuff like that, and then was like, hey, what's this, what do I feel, I feel a bit weird, what's this weird feeling? And it wasn't quite the same as being like, you know, backstage waiting for your name or anything like that to be called, but it was as the closest I've had to those kind of feelings and emotion for quite some time, of that slightly, you know, the little bit of trepidation that you have, obviously that little bit of excitement as well, but then that just that weird feeling in the pit of the stomach that it's weird, isn't it? It's sort of, you know, but it's there, you know. And I think anyone who's ever gigged sort of will recognize that feeling that you do get from time to time of like, oh, what is that, yeah, what's this strange thing? And then obviously by that point you just need it to start so that you can kind of get back into it again. But it's no, that's what I think a lot of people have been missing, obviously these last couple of months. It is one of those, isn't it, where even, you know,
it's kind of like a, what do you call it, you know, white knuckle ride, isn't it? Those people, adventure seekers, what do they call those people that like to go hang gliding and rock climbing and all
extreme sport people.
Yeah.
I don't think they call them extreme sport people. I think I'm an extreme sport person.
Those extreme sports people, you know.
What do they call them? Yes.
Oh, but yeah, just you saying though, that reminded me, because the first online gig I did, which, gosh, it wasn't that long ago now, was it? Because we've only been, what did I say, about 8 weeks of this, but it must have been a month or so ago when I did my first online gig. And just waiting to do it, I realised I was absolutely terrified. It was properly like going back to being an open spot doing first gig again. I was kind of, I guess mostly that's because of it's a voyage into the unknown, isn't it? Like, I haven't done this before. I don't know how it's going to go. But like you say, once you kind of get into it, I mean, I'm really enjoying them now. I'm finding them quite interesting. They're a different beast to doing a live gig, but I'm starting to play around with the format a little bit and realise the limitations of it and the extra advantages it gives in different ways.
Yeah, and you would have seen, I'm sure, I don't know how much you hang around the forums or dabble into there to see what the latest conspiracy theory or madness that's being spouted is, but obviously there's been quite a lot of, initially anyway at least, sort of a, you know, from some quarters, people putting down the live gigs a bit, you know. And I think this is where that there was a very obvious, but it seemed to be a very common misunderstanding, was the language being used was kind of people saying like, oh, it's nothing like a real gig, and it's like, well, no, it's not. No one at any point has said this is to replace the experience of doing a live gig. No one has said it's going to replicate it. If anything, everyone has been saying, like you just have, it's really different and you have to play it in a different way, and it's a different medium, and it's going to take, you know, a different mindset to to get it over to the audience, you know, and the way that you will interact with the audience while you're doing it as well. It's but you know, no one, when they're making a comedy film or a radio show or anything like that, is complaining about there not being 200 people sat in front of them laughing at their every word. You still got to deliver, you still got to put a show on, and if you do it in the right way, you can get it across. And there's been some absolutely amazing stuff that I've watched that's been made, you know, where it really has kind of obviously sparked some kind of creativity within people to reinvent the way that they do stuff. Mm-hmm. But then also at the same time, there's an awful lot of, like, you get good gigs and bad gigs, I guess, on the circuit. You know, there is a lot out there that's, yeah, you've come to it thinking that you are going to replicate what a live gig is, you know, and it's,
yeah, well, everyone's, it's difficult to do that. Everyone's feeling their way at the moment. Everyone's kind of getting into it. I know when I first did my first one, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know what this is going to be like. And you kind of just tried to, the first one, I think I probably just tried to play it like it was a live gig. Luckily, yeah, they had a few people unmuted, so I did get some feedback. I could hear laughter and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a bit more like a live gig. And then I did another one where I just had to record my set, and obviously that was with no feedback at all. So sort of you learn. I think everyone is on a kind of learning curve, aren't they, of how to use this. Some people will adapt to it really quickly and find it's some people will find that this is maybe a perfect medium for them. Maybe a live comedy,
I think so,
isn't,
yeah,
what they excel at, but doing online stuff works for them. And other people obviously will find the reverse, that they can storm a live show, but without that immediate connection to an audience, they can't really get their comedy across.
So, yeah, for myself, I must admit, it's been, you know, I got to experience those kind of, you know, emotions. I've got more live stuff booked in the diary, you know, to be going on the next few weeks with, you know, they're generally with, you know, it's not just me, you know, it's a, you know, a panel show format or a, yeah, chat show format or game show type format. So those kind of bits of where, yeah, for me, it's given me a sort of this is a little bit of a route back in almost, you know, to doing something that doesn't involve, you know, I mentioned those forums again, but waiting for someone to post that there's a gig 300 miles where I live and you'll get a fiver's petrol and that kind of thing for it, you know, yeah, and, you know, battling it out then with 600 people that are all, you know, after the same thing. And, you know, so it's, I think it's a very interesting medium. And if anything, we're all, the comedy circuit is coming, it's kind of coming to the, this might take some, you know, shock some people, but are coming to the internet a little bit late, you know. It's been going a little while now, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and everyone on the circuit is talking about it as if it's this brand new medium that's just been invented. Well, there's fucking online vloggers and bloggers and pranksters and whatever you, yep, can bloody think of that are multi-billionaires off the back,
yeah,
of it.
Absolutely.
Have got,
yeah,
millions of followers worldwide, and we're coming to it going, oh, I don't think this, making people laugh on the internet, what a load of rubbish, that was never going to work.
I don't think this Instagram thing, I don't think that's going to catch on.
No, exactly. What? So it's hilarious, really, that, you know, that some people have been questioning it as a medium, you know. And it's like, well, yeah, it's not what you guys normally do, but there's some people that have done pretty well out of it, you know. And
yeah,
they're probably the ones that are pissed off, are the ones who have been doing it for years that all of a sudden have got 10 times the competition that they're,
yeah, all these Johnny come latelys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that are all going to piss off again as soon as live gigs start. Well, anyway,
I mean, obviously everyone has their own individual theories of what will happen once the comedy circuit kind of comes back. I'm hoping it does come back, obviously. But I think online comedy, obviously you said it isn't a replacement, and it's not at all, but I think it'll be I think for a little while it'll be a compliment, and maybe it'll be another way of doing comedy. I think, I don't see why when live comedy comes back that online comedy will just shut down completely. I think some of it will work really well as a compliment.
Yeah,
or
definitely
a slightly different medium.
Yeah,
I think what's interesting as well is that not only are the individual people, the individual comics or performers are learning ways to to adapt to use it. Also, the format as well is because people have realised that, like, you know, the average comedy night's probably about what, two and a half hours with a couple of breaks.
Yeah.
Everyone doing sort of about 20 minutes or so. And online comedy obviously doesn't work like that. Online comedy, people aren't going to sit there for 2.5 hours. They might watch half an hour to an hour. So everyone needs to be a bit shorter, snappier. Everything needs to be a bit quicker moving. So the format's kind of all sort of changing slightly. And we're all kind of working that out at the moment as we go along.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, one of the shows I did a few weeks back with, like, on the night, like 1,500 views or something like that. There's no way that we're normally gigging to 1,500 people on a
Friday night as well.
You know, there's absolutely no way that we're normally getting that sort of exposure. Just from, like you said, that one gig that you go to, you absolutely nail it. But even some of the larger ones, 400, you know. Max, probably 500 in some of the clubs, you know, but, you know, then it's gone, isn't it? There's no way to tell people other, you know, unless you just start emailing randomly inventing email addresses to tell people you had a good gig, going through the phone book or something, you know, and just to let you know, had a wonderful show this evening, passing on to your neighbours.
Well,
thank you.
That's what Facebook's for, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, just drop that into the conversation.
Yeah, just in your status, you know. Great gig in Aldershot tonight. Should have been there. It was amazing.
Yeah, smashed it again. Yeah.
What I'm also finding interesting is I was saying about finding ways to play around with the format and stuff. I don't know if this is a sign of my creativity or the fact that I've been 8 weeks in lockdown and starting to lose my mind. But a couple of nights ago, I did... did a gig as a northern giraffe glove puppet. So that's something I never would have done in a live show.
Are you going to be taking this live? Can we expect to see you on tour?
I don't know. It's a bit difficult to do it live, isn't it? I was thinking whether there would be a way of me being able to do it, but I'd have to sit in a really large box with just the glove puppet sticking out over the top, I guess.
There's the sock puppet theatre, isn't there?
Kev
Sutherland does. So.
Yeah, Kev does it brilliantly. Maybe I'll have to work out how he does it. Yeah. Borrow his box. But the great thing, obviously, was doing it online, was I could just stick the glove puppet up so that was the only thing on camera, although my puppetry skills aren't great, and for at least half the gig you could see about a quarter of my head in the corner of the screen as well.
Not getting signed up for City in the near future then.
No, not just yet. I need to work on that a little bit. But it was a bit of a spur of the moment thing, and I just thought I'll do that because it's a bit different and I would never do that live. But it seemed to go down quite well, so who knows.
Yeah, no, it's great fun, isn't it? And I think if you just go into it with the mentality of, look, this is something different, and I think for a lot of people it will be part of their mental health requirements anyway to still be putting out some kind of output or, you know, creating something still. Because, you know, especially, you know, for the guys that are going from gigging every single night of the week to, you know, home.
Let's face it, most of us performers how can I say it politely? I don't know we're a bit nuts.
Yeah.
Is that the politically correct term?
Yeah, I think that's what they say now.
He's a bit nuts. It's basically comedy is therapy for most of us, isn't it? So we need to keep getting it out there to prevent our brains from frying in some way.
Yeah, too right, mate. Too right. It's it's just the weirdest of, it seems like the biggest understatement ever, but it's just such strange times that just over 2 months ago we'd have, you know, was the plot of something on Netflix we were all watching probably, wasn't it? You know,
can you imagine? I keep stopping every now and again and just thinking, if I went back a year and was trying to explain to myself where we'd be in 2020 and go, imagine trying to explain this to someone going, yeah, in a year's time, we'll all be sat in our houses 24/7. No one will be allowed out. What? What's going on? We won't be allowed to go out. There'll be hardly anyone will be at work. It's just like you say, it's just a weird situation. All the schools will be shut. There'll be no football. There'll be no entertainment of any live entertainment of any kind.
Yeah.
Elton John will sing a song really, really badly.
Yeah.
Actually, that's probably not quite so unbelievable.
Anton Deck will be doing Saturday night shows from their own homes, sort of split screen and all.
I've not watched any like of that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
because I struggle because people were telling me about like, have I got news for you and stuff like that with the people having to film it at home. It just must look so weird.
Yeah, it's just they had the struggle that I've experienced myself on doing like streaming stuff online, which is even though you can see each other's faces, that sort of talking over each other sometimes, or you know, because you're not in the same room, you know, playing off of each other is a completely different experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
To when you're, you know, sat on set together and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, a little bit of, yeah, struggling with the medium kind of thing. Like we said before, like loads of people have, just doing it for the first time and experimenting with it. But yeah, I've really enjoyed that. Well, not that it's happened yet, but I hope it goes long enough for the soaps to run out of episodes.
What are the soaps going to do? And are they going to acknowledge this as well? Are they going to acknowledge that this is happening in soap world?
So I'm a bit of an authority on this.
Oh, okay. I'll be interesting to know.
Self-imposed. But no, they're not. So none of them are within storylines or plots acknowledging what's going on in the outside world at all at the moment, which does make it does make it weird watching like everyone in the pub together on Corrie and stuff like that.
Yeah, you
know, it's like, or people just hugging each other on the street. And
well, any gathering on TV or films just looks weird at the moment, doesn't it? Just like, you watch a film from a few years ago and everyone's say at a football match or in a pub or something, and you go, what the hell are you doing?
It's disgusting. Look at them touching each other. Yeah, it is. Yeah, really weird. But I get why they've done that, because it would be, you know, like Ken Barlow.
It's a bit of a downer, isn't it?
Ken Barlow sat in his lounge on his own, and then.
But when they come back, surely there'll be references to coronavirus.
They can't, because it won't have happened in their world, will it? So they can't all of a sudden start talking about it. So they've all reduced the number of shows that they put out weekly. So that's nice. That's gone back to, like, you know, the olden days, you know, when it wasn't on every single night of the week or twice on some nights and stuff like that. So just down to, you know, a couple of episodes a week.
How long have they got before they run out of episodes?
I think Corrie's meant to have about 6 weeks or something, they reckon.
Okay.
But yeah, so what do they
do? And then what are they going to do?
I don't know. They just stop? Because that's been on for like 60 years or something ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
That show, like, every single week, and nothing has ever meant that they've, like, missed an episode or something's not gone out. They can't do that split. They can't just do, like, Deirdre calling. This is how... I sound like I know a lot about it, and then I have to think of characters' names.
Yeah.
I'm like, just mention two people that died, like, 25 years ago, isn't it, or something. Like,
every episode will just be a Zoom call between...
Yeah. Like
Deirdre and Ken. That's my age as well. I don't
know. Yeah, Deirdre. She's dead, actually. I do know Deirdre's dead. Yeah. I don't know why that's so funny. Apologies. Rest in peace.
Yeah, sorry, Deirdre.
Yeah. But I bring it down on it. I think it's because the actress died. I think that, yeah. So, yeah, it is going to be like a Zoom calls of, the pub shut. But then it would be like, well, how come are you only just going on lockdown now? Coronation Street, you know, the rest of the world. What I'd like, if they could do, they could almost go, you know, a bit sci-fi and everything with it. Because everyone, like, no one ever leaves the street. It's one of those programs, isn't it? You know, it's how they always shop in that little mini-mart kind of thing. And it's like, everyone else in the real world knows, you don't do your weekly shop in Spa, because it would cost a fucking fortune, and there's hardly anything in, like, everything is, you know, washing up liquid would be like three times the price, you know. You haven't got...
I've never really watched Coronation Street that much. I used to watch EastEnders a bit more, though, because is Coronation Street the same? Is when people leave, Because when people left EastEnders, they either left in a box, didn't they? Because they were either dead.
Yeah.
Or there was a couple of places that people used to go to, didn't they? Where did they used to go? It was like EastEnders.
Well, yeah, EastEnders. It would be like
put out to pasture.
Someone would move to Manchester or something, wouldn't they?
Yeah, there were certain places, weren't there?
Yeah, me and the wife always laugh about that because they have these big, huge goodbyes.
Yeah.
Like, and play emotional music at the end of the episode as someone moves to like Slough or something. And it's like,
you could never come back.
It's like an hour up. You could visit him at the weekend.
Call each other, you know.
Yeah. It's like an hour away. Like, people commute that distance to go into London.
Do you think the writers of EastEnders and Coronation Street should just sort of grab the thistle, as it were, and just go, right, we're embracing the sci-fi multiverse like a Marvel thing, and this Coronation Street reality has gone off on a divergent timeline.
I'm sure I've got a distant memory of once, for like some special occasion, they had a crossover. I'm sure they had once some EastEnders characters like turned up.
Oh, I thought you meant Coronation Street and Marvel.
Oh. Yeah, they had a bit of a mashup of.
Iron Man turned up in The Rover's Return.
Yeah, he like took a. It was the new landlord, only for a day or something, and it was never
Tony
referenced
Stark.
Again. Yeah, didn't quite work out for him. Yeah, melted a couple of people on the cobbles, and then swiftly moved on. Decided it wasn't for him. But no,
there was a Coronation Street EastEnders crossover.
I'm sure they had. Wow. I'm sure I remember as a kid, it was like a big event. In the household. This is before AstroTurf was invented, you see, so we had to find our own entertainment now. and I'm sure there was someone like on purpose. It wasn't like they didn't just wander on the set or something, although that would be quite good as well. They should do more of that. They should pool resources and be like, you know, I'm moving to Manchester, and then they like just, why not?
I'm going to work in this pub. What's it called? Oh, something return.
Yeah.
And everyone would go, oh, he's going to work in The Rover's Return. Oh, exciting. It used to happen in Australian soaps, didn't it, a lot? Not that I think they were deliberate crossovers, but because there only seemed to be in the 80s. So did you watch Neighbours and Home and Away and all those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely get home from school and bob those on, yeah.
Yeah, there only seemed to be about 12 actors and actresses, didn't there, in Australia. So like everyone in Neighbours would turn up in Home and Away at some point and vice versa. And Young Doctors and Flying Doctor, and pretend that there was all characters that just crossed over from one to the other.
Yeah, that they still exist somewhere, and that their lives go on. I mean, this is sort of this is very sort of mainstream. You know, we're talking about TV soaps and stuff like that. I've actually that is a change that I've noticed in myself during lockdown. Actually, that I seem much more accepting of. Like mainstream, like pop culture, I guess you'd describe it as.
Okay.
Maybe even more appreciative of it, which normally I'm like I still am. Don't get me wrong, a miserable, boring bastard, basically. You know, and I pride myself on it most of the time. But yeah, I don't know what it is. Maybe it has been the whole sort of. Lack of connection with people and, you know, interaction and all that sort of thing, that now it's like I get why people like
familiarity.
And sort of like, so I was was asked to go on to sort of like some local community radio station to be interviewed and chat about some comedy stuff and things like that, and you get to pick three songs. Now, normally that would have been an opportunity for me to force, you know, some obscure music onto an unappreciative audience, you know, and I would have reveled, you know, in that. But I went for Ollie Murs, McFly, and Taylor Swift. I like the three songs I chose. But my mindset.
Jeez, Kev, who hurt you, man?
I know, but my mindset was like, I was just like saying, well, I think this is the sort of. Like, this isn't me. I don't know what's happened to me, but I think this is the sort of music that it doesn't
what the world needs.
Hurt you to listen to at the moment. Some really well-produced overly produced pop music, you know.
Yeah.
But I get it now. I sort of get some of those bits of where they have, you know, why they've got a place.
Yeah, yeah. Not that I really believe in it as a concept, really, but what would you say has been your lockdown kind of guilty pleasure? What's the kind of most sentimental or mainstream or thing that you normally wouldn't watch or listen to or that you've actually thought?
Oh, my okay. wife.
Wife.
Yeah, normally we'd ignore each other, but we've been forced to. I don't know. I have watched it in the past, but we've quite been enjoying Britain's Got Talent this time around.
Oh, okay.
But as like that's like the 4-5 next week, so I don't sound too bad of a parent because it's on quite late, isn't it? By the time it's rolled on for a couple of hours, anyway. But that's right. Sort of like her treat every week is we let her stay up and watch that with us in the lounge, okay. And like we have some popcorn and stuff like that. And I guess that's helping as well in my kind of.
Does that make it feel like the world is still kind of?
Yeah, it erodes a little bit of bitterness in that you see how innocent someone can enjoy it without years of, you know, kind of anger about the pop industry or the music industry or
right.
entertainment and stuff like that. When you see a 5-year-old going to those kind of things with complete, like, innocence, you know, and just taking yeah. it at face, probably taking it at the level that you're meant to. But a lot of mm-hmm. us don't because we're, as I said, bitter and been in the game too long and been too many scars.
Cynics.
Yeah, exactly. Been hurt.
Hurt too many times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To be fooled again, to like something. So, yeah, that's been, quite, we've enjoyed that because she is like amazed by stuff on there. Like, you know, it blows her mind basically. You know, the
that's quite
the
nice,
singing,
yeah,
the dancing, the magic, everything is like, you know, wow. You know, properly like, wow, first time seeing stuff.
Yeah.
So that's been, I've enjoyed that. That's been nice.
Beautiful moment.
Thank
and then you
mate.
Take them out into the garden to just electrocute them.
Yeah, for the therapy afterwards to erode them. Erode those memories. What about you, mate? What's been an enjoyable time for you to come from this?
I was just thinking about that. I don't know, actually. We've been watching kind of various kind of, you know, box sets, trying to go through things. But they all tend to be the things that, you know, everyone's kind of recommended. So they all kind of, started watching The Mandalorian. And we've been watching, we've been watching a science fiction thing called The Expanse.
Okay.
Which took a while to get into, but. So, yeah, not a lot else, really.
Well, that's good. You asked me a very good question. You just didn't have a very good answer.
Yeah, no,
yourself.
I'm glad I asked the question rather
that was a good
than
question.
You asking me. Yeah,
I'm going to use that. I'm going to ask other people that question.
Yeah, I asked that question, I thought I don't know how I'd answer this question. And I hoped you wouldn't ask me.
I do.
You
that
turned
all
the tables.
Yeah, I hope they're. I like with. It's like when you can't remember someone's name, and you hope that they don't remember say yours, you have to introduce someone to someone else.
Yeah. Number of times I must come across as really rude for not introducing two people, but it's purely because I can't remember one or other name.
Oh, I know I'm turning into like a 70s comedian here, the amount of times I've said my wife during this podcast. But my wife will very often, as we've walked away from a group of people, say like, oh, thanks for introducing me. And it's like, I couldn't introduce you because I couldn't remember their fucking name. So how do you introduce someone and you can't, you know, or you'll do that thing of where you'll introduce your wife to the other person.
Yeah. And you
and
wait
say,
for
oh,
them.
Hi, this is my wife, Farah, and hope that, and then stop.
I hope
and everyone
jump
looks
in,
at you and goes, why haven't you finished? Why have you only introduced half of the, and who is this? No, you finished that bit. You come on, you jump in.
Perhaps we should all do something like, this is my wife, and I won't be so presumptuous as to introduce you. I'll let you do the honours.
Yeah, tell us about hello. Tell my wife about yourself or something. Yeah, that might work.
You've got such a wonderful name. I don't want to trample all over you delivering it. Why don't you tell my wife what your name is?
Yeah, I might not pronounce your name right, so do you mind?
And they go, my name's John Smith.
So I never quite got my tongue around those foreign names. So.
I tell you what, I don't know how interesting this is, but I've got kind of a reverse problem at the moment in that I walk my dog, and we've got a dog who's called Chuck. But there's a man I meet quite often walking his dog who is firmly under the impression that our dog is called Jack.
Oh, right.
And it's got way too far into it now for me. I can't correct him because I've not corrected him for so long. But every time I'm with the guy, I try to call my dog, and I go, Chuck, Chuck, so that he'll pick up on it. But he still insists on calling the dog Jack.
Oh, he must have.
And kind of had to settle now that we're just going to have to call the dog Jack.
And he's probably going home saying, oh, I bumped into that guy with a speech impediment again.
Yeah. Poor... You know, he can't say the word Jack. He seems he goes, Chuck, Chuck. It's so weird.
Well, has he got a dog, or is he just a walk?
Yeah, he's got a dog called Dylan. I wonder if I should reply. Should I start calling his dog Chillin or something? Or
Dolan, or I don't know.
Dolan, yeah. Something. Oh, see what happens.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to do. It's like it's gone. You know that there's that window of opportunity, isn't there, to correct someone, and if you don't use it,
yeah,
then you can't. You can never correct them again.
No. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Yeah, I've had people call me Ken over the years. But I don't know how I get that a lot.
I've just come up with a solution, actually. Next time I meet him, I should suggest he listens to this podcast. I say to him, there's a wonderful podcast that you might be interested in. He'll listen to it, and then he'll go, oh, I wonder if he means me.
He probably won't put two and two together, though, and it'll be...
And he'll go, how's Jack? Yeah. As he did.
Heard that bit of material you did about some idiot. Very good. Yeah, the old come here, Jack. Oh no, yeah, it is. It's awkward on stuff like that. But these are the, the delights of lockdown and where we find ourselves at the moment, mate. That it's weird because we're not going out. These are almost like the biggest problems that we've got at the moment. So I guess
We were saying, weren't we, about how it's changed things. I'll tell you what, most exciting thing that happens to me every week now, bin day. Yes. Bin day is like so exciting. It's bin day tomorrow, and I've already put the bins out. I'm so excited.
Ahead of the game, mate.
That something is going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. No, the
bins will get emptied.
On our bin day, one of the neighbours was taking theirs out, and he was like, stupid questions that people ask you. It's one of those where he was probably kicking himself afterwards, going like, you know, I'd have got it back in after that and gone, why? What the fuck? You know, kicking yourself, literally. Because he's like, hi there. He's like, oh, what are you up to today? You know, it's like everyone knows that no one is really up to anything today, obviously. So, you know, how are you? Or something like that, you know. So then it was a bit awkward for me because I was like, oh, I don't really know. Is he joking? Is he wanting a, like, oh, nothing? You know, but yeah, it was one of those awkward moments. I think I intimated that all I was doing was putting the bins out, and then he thought I was being rude and went
just
going
to put the bins out, you know, and
then get back to probably put them back in again.
Just for something to do.
Yeah, a bit later.
Wouldn't it be good if you were one of those? Oh, I've just realised those people—they're adrenaline junkies, aren't they? Those adventure people,
not extreme sports people,
not extreme sports people. But if you were an adrenaline junkie, that would be the way to get through this, wouldn't it? Leave it till the last possible second to put your bins out.
Yeah.
Like, wait until they're literally at your driveway or outside your house.
Yeah.
Well, and then, but that would be so exciting, wouldn't it? Because, like, just imagine if you didn't catch them in time.
Yeah, I actually didn't put our... It wasn't Black Bin Day. Obviously, you cannot miss a Black Bin Day.
Oh, my God, you don't want to miss Black Bin Day.
Miss Black Bin Day. But I did miss Brown Bin Day today. But it's not too bad. It's about half full, so I think.
Is brown bin get out garden waste at your end, or is that recycled?
No. Oh no, no. It's well, I'm up north, remember? So brown bin for us is like human waste.
human waste.
Yeah.
Where you empty your bed chamber.
Yeah. Yes.
I forgot you guys don't have
dead children.
don't have sewage pipelines and things up there.
We put the bodies in the brown bins. That have died from the virus and stuff like that. You know, if you think you've got problems
with
PPE down your way, you know, literally not one glove has made it north of Birmingham yet. So it's, you know, we're still make do amend up here and all that.
I've got obsessed with, because I don't know, I'm still none the wiser what your brown bins actually are. Are they the recycling ones?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Oh, they're recycling. Okay. Yeah. No, because we've got a black, a green, and a brown bin. We get brown bins for garden waste.
Oh no, green for garden waste.
Oh God, you're just mavericks up there, aren't you?
Why would you not put walkers
with their crisp packets. This is just.
Oh, what? That is mental. Why would you not put garden in green?
Yeah, but by recycling. Green, aren't you?
Where do we? Oh, grass cutting. So brown.
Brown. Yeah. Brown.
And what? Plastic and stuff green, is it?
Yeah, because you're being green, aren't you? No, by recycling. No.
Brown is glass. Tin. And
I didn't realise this was such plastic. This is like the old.
Where were you putting your paper then?
In the green bin with the recycling.
You put it. You people are animals. You put. So we've got.
Savages in the Midlands, mate.
Mate, we've got. Get this. It's going to blow your tiny Midlands mind.
No way.
Black. Yeah. Green, as we said, for plants, because they're green.
Right, yeah. Plants green.
Brown.
Okay.
Plastic. Brown. Tin. Plastic. Whatever. Aluminium. Whatever. Blue. Paper.
Blue. Hard.
There's another bin.
Blue for paper?
Yeah. There's a fourth bin.
Where do you live? You live in Manchester, don't you?
Four bins.
You're a bit like John Prescott, aren't you? Like, two jags. I'm four bins, Kev, me.
So, you know, no sanitary products or, help against the virus.
How big's your blue bin?
Oh, it's big. It's
who's producing that much paper waste? What are you doing?
25-liter a bin or something, probably. I don't know.
What paper are you putting in there? Does it take cardboard as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, you can put whatever you want in it. There's no alarm system on it.
It's a bit like the lockdown. It's not really policed, is it?
Yeah, probably. No, it's not too strongly policed. But yeah, paper. But I keep saying paper, card, and paper and card products.
So do you have, because we have alternate weeks of, we have black bin 1 week, green bin the next.
Yeah.
So are you on a 3-weekly cycle, 4-weekly? Are you on?
Today was.
Well, welcome to Bin Cast, everybody.
I find it quite interesting. Brown and green today.
Brown and green, yeah.
Next Thursday will be someone in the council obviously having a bit of a joke with us. Black and blue.
You're black and blue.
Yeah.
But what? How can they take the black and blue together? Does the paper not get mixed in with the?
Mate, this. Hold on.
Oh my God! You
hold on. You're like, to your hats, mate.
You're like, you're living in the future. This is amazing.
Mate, they send more than one fucking van round.
Really?
Yeah. So some guys turn up and do the black ones, and then someone.
How do you know it's not the same guys just going around the block? I reckon this is all a scam.
Yeah, I was going to make out different colours.
Do they all put on? Do they all put on like a fake tash and then drive around the block?
Yeah.
See.
Oh, it's recycling. I don't know why I made them have a foreign accent. That was racist. But you would put on a different accent as well. That's what I was intimating when you came back around.
No, we're definitely not the guys that picked up the black bins just now. We're different people.
So there you go, mate.
Well, I thought our bin collection was exciting, but yours is like taking it to another level.
Yeah, yeah. They really get us to work here. We're properly sorting through the rubbish, you know, not just chucking it all in there together.
Are you good with it? Do you like, because you're supposed to wash out all the cans and things? Aren't you?
That's not happening, mate. No.
No.
A little, I wouldn't.
I have to say, you've gone down slightly in my estimation, Kev. Sorry, mate.
A little. Do I? now and again a little rinse, but I'm not pedantic over it. No. I'm not doing that for any reason. You know, I'm not doing that to make a point,
or you know, go, why should I, or something like that.
Yeah.
But no, it just I'm sure they're not putting food straight in those cans, are they? When they take them away, they're probably something being done to give them a clean. I'd imagine.
They just sort them out. If it's a baked bean can, it goes straight to Heinz, and they go. You could just put some more beans in there. Just
got, got a bean tin here. Who needs some bean? Right, there you go. Spoon them in.
Yeah.
When they're spooning them out of the food waste one, aren't they, probably? Do you have a food waste bin as well, the little tiny ones?
No, we don't have that. We've just got a compost bin down the garden.
There's a fifth bin. I forgot the fifth bin.
A fifth bin?
So it's like a mini... It's like size that you'd... It's small. It's probably...
Your council's just taking the mickey, aren't they? I bet it's a gold bin, isn't it? It's gold. Just put any spare money you want to recycle, stick it in.
There's no hospitals or public transport or lighting on the roads are just, you know, like trenches. You know, they've not been resurfaced for years, but the bin services up here.
Trenches?
I meant from like all the potholes have like joined up into being.
Oh, I thought you meant you were like. The front line war zone.
Have you not heard about they've not told you about the war, the 30-year war that
Civil
we're
war.
In. Yeah. 30 years it's been going on up here, mate. That's why when people go to Manchester in soaps, they assume that they're not coming back.
Yeah. It's all starting to make sense now.
Yeah. But yeah, there is a little food bin as well that you can just put food waste into. I don't think many people bother with that one.
No,
Where
does the food waste go? Where's that going? That's being sent down to the Midlands to keep us.
They just, the van even says that on the front, that says like Birmingham on it for next destination. So, yeah, they're just doling that out down there, mate, dishing it out.
Oh, well, thanks.
Repackaged in those, straight into those bean tins, like I said.
Yeah.
Oh, bless you. Well, thanks, Tony. I don't know what the hell we've talked about for an hour, to be honest.
I get the feeling a lot of this might have to be cut out.
Well, I don't really edit anymore as well. That's how professional I am with this now.
For the sake of your audience, please edit some of this. I don't know if anyone needs 15 minutes of bin chat.
I might, if I do edit it, all I'm going to do is I'm going to put that bit in twice. That would be the only editing.
I think you should cut out the bin chat from the version you release.
Yeah.
And then just, do you have a Patreon or anything else? Like you could put the bin chat as added content that people have to pay for.
Until now, Tony, I've not had any content good enough to start a Patreon. But now, obviously,
there's got to be a lot of bin enthusiasts out there that.
I bet there's.
Pay quality money for
people into all sorts, isn't there, mate? There's probably little forums bin and stuff chat. About the bins. People get very upset about the bins around here, but then with there being that many bins, I mean, how do you store five bins at your house? You know, this is a
Well, we've actually got six bins. Although we're doing
Are we doing the encore on bins now?
This is just in case anyone hadn't had enough about bins. Because although we've only got three types of bins, we've got two of each type. Because there's six of us in a house, so we do produce quite a lot of waste.
That's right.
That sounds wrong, doesn't it?
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end.
Let's end on waste products.
From two has-beens to... I don't know where that was going. Thanks, mate. Needed to work on that before I said it live, really. That needed writing down, but it's tweaking. Never mind. Thank you very much, Tony. I've really enjoyed
that
conversation.
It's been wonderful to talk to someone outside of my immediate inner circle.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your time. And when the real world, whatever form it comes back in, I've got a couple of gigs up this way that you've never done before. So we'll get you up, hopefully.
Thanks,
mate. Come and see the bins with your own eyes.
Yeah, I will. I'll come take some pictures.
It's worth a trip. I won't give you a gig. Just come up and Just come up and bring the family just, as well, mate. Bring
yeah,
them all up.
Yeah. I might do. Just one last question. The blue bin, is it a dark blue or a pale blue?
So I would... Chelsea blue, I'd describe it as, really.
Oh, okay. Not a Manchester City
quite,
blue.
No, it's quite vibrant. Yeah, it's quite,
oh, quite
royal,
like
royal bluish, maybe. You'd
yeah.
describe
if
it,
it had
as.
Been a sky blue bin, I wouldn't have been so interested. But now it's a royal blue.
No,
bin.
Although some, you do see them, and they've just been out in the sun for too long. They're a bit faded. That's all.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, on that bombshell.
On that bombshell.
Thanks very much, Tony. Lots of love to you and yours. Stay safe,
cheers,
my friend.
Mate, and yours. Yeah, try not to shock each other too much.
I'm going out there now. I think I need a bit yeah. after this.
Get a hit.
I'm going to shock myself, roll around. Catch you later,
mate. All right,
mate.
Brilliant bye, stuff. Mate. Thanks, Kev. Bye.
So thank you very much, Tony Cowards. Wasn't that brilliant? It was. I really enjoyed that. I really needed that. Irrelevant chat for in the main, wasn't it? I needed that today, so thank you very much for that, Tony. And we had a good old giggle. Hope you did as well, listening along. As I said at the top, please do check out the show notes for where you can find out everything Tony Cowards, what he's up to, his online stuff, and also, obviously, when we can gig again, all the news on where he posts his live shows as well. I'm really excited. Love to get him up to Manchester gigging for us as well, would be great. And again, to repeat myself, please do check out our social media at Pullback Reveal on most things these days. And yeah, that little link that is in the notes as well, to let you know how you can just chip in a couple of quid, buy us a tea or a coffee or a lager if you so wish. And yeah, we can keep making this stuff and do some bigger, better, brighter, shinier things for you as well. I do hope that you're all safe out there, that you are coping with the current situation and what's going on at the moment. We're here for you. Check out all the socials. We're chucking a ton of stuff out there at the moment, and I hope that you enjoy it. And if you do, let us know. Drop us 5 stars or something. I think that's it for now. It's late enough. Time to get this podcast episode out to the world, so that you can sit back, relax, and enjoy it as much as I did. Thanks once again, Tony. And big love to all of you as well. Goodbye. Well, blow me down with a feather if Pullback Reveal don't have a sponsor in the form of JokePit.com, the comedy box office. Oh yes, they are an amazing group of people who predominantly sell tickets for live gigs. Can you remember that? Do you remember when we used to go out and see live comedy? Well, that's what they predominantly do, but they also, during these difficult times, are doing some absolutely sterling work when it comes to promoting comedians, still helping people put some live content out onto social media and streaming stuff and podcast support, like they're doing with us now as well, which is absolutely amazing. You need to check these guys out. Get yourselves along to jokepit.com to see what they're up to, for all your comedy needs and wants and desires, and some stuff you don't even realize you need is on there as well. And hey, look, if you're a promoter or a stand-up yourself and you're looking for someone to do a bit of promoting for you to help you with those ticket sales and with any other content that you've got, you know, you'd be hard pushed to find a better place to go. Check them out, jokepit.com, the comedy box office.